Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Collectors, it's the moment you've been waiting for. Today, we welcome back our stamp and coin experts to take your questions. First, we welcome back David Tripp. He's the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and The Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant and a cartoonist, if you're scoring at home. Also joining us this afternoon is Bob Scott, our stamp expert and director of the postage stamp department, Bonhams, an English-owned international auction house. Previously, Bob spent 2 years as senior technical specialist at Christie's Auction House and was director of Sotheby's postage stamp department for 7 years. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Wonderful to be back.
Lovely to be here, Ray.
Nice to have you here. Now, remember, the lines are usually pretty busy during this program, so I advise you to call in early. Get in the queue, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at our website, wamc.org/voxpop. There's a spot to comment there. Let's see here. You can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. Any other way? Facebook, right?
Is there any way they cannot get in touch with you?
Semaphore, it doesn't work anymore. Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can comment there. There's a VoxPop wall post. All right. So before we talk about stamps and coins, let's talk about the grave super complication. $25 million for a watch.
The coolest watch on the planet, bar none. It is does everything except take your pulse, and it probably did that as well.
It chimed.
It chimed, yes.
I guess it still does chime.
It still does.
It's very much in the present, unlike its owner.
Okay, so now we had an interesting discussion. Now, if you haven't followed this news, the grave super complication, as I understand, was commissioned in the 20s, finally finished early 30s.
Right. It was delivered in 1933, yeah.
To a wealthy banker, and it, among other things, will show the skyline, not the skyline, but the stars.
The star patterns, yeah.
From the vantage point of his New York City home.
Exactly.
And this is it's a super complication.
It's
it took a long time to make this
because
watch.
Because it's super complicated.
Right, and it's all mechanical. Computers involved.
In the design or in the manufacture.
And it's the holy grail of collector watches, and this Sheikh owned it.
Sheikh Saud Al Thani, yes, from Qatar.
Now, what I've learned before the program started was there's a bit of a deadbeat. He's dead now, but he was a deadbeat then.
The Sheikh is sadly passed away a couple of days ago, only in London.
Yeah.
Age 48. But yes, he did have a record of, shall we say, slow payment over the years.
But he eventually would pay.
He did pay. And this is a man who was probably the most rapacious collector on the planet, certainly in my lifetime.
Of just watches or everything?
No, everything. He would, anything that he got interested in, he would dive in with both feet and basically take over the market. He bought coins, he bought stamps, he bought books, photographs, bicycles, automobiles, antiquities, art. And if he was in the market was made. I mean, it was just because he did, his money is basically coming out of the ground by the second.
Yeah.
He also bought minerals. And so if he wanted something, he didn't care if the estimate was $100,000. He'd pay $1 million.
So he kicked the bucket a week ago.
He kicked the bucket
just 4 days ago.
On Sunday.
And it was sold 2 days later.
Yes.
Now, how did that happen?
Well, it was already consigned to Sotheby's about 6 or 8 months ago. It was in the papers that, you know, because of his financial issues, that he had taken it, they had taken it as security, and he agreed to sell that to pay off and buy other things.
And make no mistake, it was the rarest watch in the world.
There's one.
Before he bought it, all the time he owned it, and since its sale yesterday, it has just recaptured its place as the world's most expensive watch.
Yeah, he paid $12 million
about, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
And now it went for
24. So basically doubled up. So what is it? The rich get richer if they're alive.
Right. And you can't take it with you.
And you can't take it with you.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Jerry in Voorheesville, you're first.
Hello. I have a plate that was presented. It was a third award at the Centenary International Philatelic Exhibition in New York City.
Oh.
17th to 25th, 1947. A plate block.
Yes,
it's a commemorative.
It's a commemorative. It's a, like a dinner. It's 10.5 inches in diameter.
Right.
And it has a U.S. postage stamp on the top.
Right.
Has a 5-cent stamp and the
10-cent
stamp.
Yes. The Washington and Franklin. And do you know who it was awarded to?
Charles G. Reese.
Charles Reese. It'll be easy to look up and see what he actually won. It was a huge stamp show because obviously it was the centenary of the postage stamp in the regular postage stamp in the United States. It was probably the number one prize would have been made out of silver. The second is quite possibly glassware. The third, a book. People do actually collect these prizes. We sold one for a collection. Actually, it was a call that came into this show.
I'll be darned.
Really?
Yes. Where's my cut?
Actually, the person that I gave the advice to, I'm still wondering where my cut, or at least maybe a bottle of wine came from, because right. I wrote a very nice description. That was a silver prize. It was a first prize. He sold that for nearly $5,000.
Wow.
The commemorative plate, obviously, it's not going to have, the base metal, but it does have an appeal to a collector. It's not going to be $5,000, but I would think it should be a good $200, $300, $400.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. So hope that answers the question. But it's a nice prize, and depending on who the collector was, what the exhibit was, will actually depend on whether it's the high or the low side of that figure. If it's a noted collection, I'm sorry, I don't know it. It'll be worth more.
It said U.S. I think commemorative, and then I can't make out the last.
It'll be very easy to look up. If you want to drop us an email after the show, I'll tell you exactly who he is and what he won it for. But
okay,
it must
good.
Have been a good. Must have, I wish you had the collection.
Bob just bottom lines it for
because
us right
that
there.
That would be considerably more.
Jerry, thanks a lot for the call.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. David Tripp and Bob Scott here. We talk stamps and coins. Tom and Limas. Tom.
Yes, how are you doing?
Hi, good. Tom. Fine. How are
hey,
you?
Tom.
Good. My question is it worth it to purchase the proof sets from the Mint directly, the annual proof coin sets?
I have a lot of friends who worked at the Mint, but I'm going to honestly tell you no.
Ah.
Yeah.
Quite candidly, their aftermarket value it does not hold up. If you are actually interested in buying modern proof sets, the trick is basically to go around to local coin and stamp shows and things like that, because dealers will often have them a few years later for a price significantly less than
so
the
wait.
Government issue. So wait. The problem is, quite candidly, that in the olden days, he said, speaking agedly, when they made proofs, they were really serious collector items. And in certain years, they would make for, in 1910, let's say, they made 4,000 proof pennies. Today, it's more like 8 million. And you have your basic issue, which is simply supply and demand, because there are so many produced, and the market, the government just jacks up the price beyond belief. So my personal opinion is wait a little bit. And as
what
a
about just the,
sorry?
Well, like the quarters and the dollars, which were a series, like if you're collecting the whole set of
great because you're putting a collection together. But what I'm saying is that buying it direct from the Mint is not always the cheapest way to go.
So
about
if you're looking for
it.
Financial gain, maybe not. But if you're a collector and
exactly.
this is what you're interested
in, and with for example with the States dollars, it's wonderful to put a full set together, and it's a fascinating series, and it was clever. It was actually the suggestion of Harvey Stack, who was one of the deans of the coin business since the 1940s. He thought it was a great way to get people interested in coin collecting, and I can't say I disagree with him. I think it's a wonderful idea.
The most important thing is you can do it at a quarter at a time. You don't have to go to the proofs.
Yeah.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
All right, over to Gary in Great Barrington. Hi, Gary, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I was renovating my old house, not quite sure how old it was, in the early 1900s or probably before in the 1800s. Pulled out the floor and found posts and beams, and one of my friends who was helping me, Roger, found a coin. He said, I found a coin, 1858.
1858, okay.
And I said, it must be 1950. He said, no, 1858. So I looked it up on the Google, and it was a flying eagle penny.
A flying eagle, right. They only made those for 3 years, from 1856 to 1858. That
and
is a
so
cool find.
The when you bring something up on Google, the images come up, and there was one on eBay for $15,000.
Yikes.
Yes, well.
Okay, here comes the sad part.
Yeah,
all right.
Really, really
sad. My question is, what is a proof, and what is, what you know, why is the proof worth 15 in my penny, 1858 penny, is worth probably $15.
All right. Well, you at least you don't even need me to give you a value. I can just explain the reason. Well, first of all, your penny is probably pretty well worn, and it was stuck under the floorboards and stayed there forever. A proof was a coin that was made essentially for collectors and originally for presentation. So the actual blank of metal that was used to strike the coin was polished to a nice sheen so that there were no imperfections, no scrapes. And then it was put when it was struck, the dyes that were used to actually impart the image onto it were also shined up and polished and had no imperfections. And then the coin was actually struck more than once to bring the design fully into relief. And as a result, proofs are essentially the way the ideal coin is supposed to look, the way the designer had in mind.
Yeah.
Okay, and so they only made, you know, in 1858, they only made a couple hundred.
Okay.
Whereas they made 24 million of the pennies that you have.
All right.
Okay.
Gary, we've
got
to take a
difference.
Break here, but thanks very much. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. David Tripp, Bob Scott, Ray Graff, you coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Kent Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient, net-zero, passive house, home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations serving Western Massachusetts. KentHicksConstruction.com. In-term healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home, 2 to 24 hours a day, so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, InTermHealthcare.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Winslow Homer, The Nature and Rhythm of Life, through January 4th, 2015, arkellmuseum.org. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. We talk coins and stamps today. David Tripp and Bob Scott are here. So we've been talking a lot about proofs today. Has there ever been a situation where somebody had a proof and just went to the five and dime and bought something?
Regularly.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
That would haunt me for the rest of my days.
I've actually, you know, in my rather aged career, I've seen gold coins that were made as proofs that would be worth, you know, $150,000. They just threw it in. Somebody can be poor. You know, first of all, in, let's say, 1894,
right,
you buy a $2.50 gold piece from the mint.
Right.
What does it cost you? $2.60. That's they charged you 10 cents over face value,
mm-hmm.
unlike today with a proof set cost $38 when there's 91 cents worth of coin in it.
Yeah.
So occasionally people need money, or the kid dips into the pocket.
Gets himself a Clark bar.
And boom, it's out there.
I'll be darned. All right, back to the phones we go. 1-800-348-2551. Laura is calling in, what, Gardner, New York, you say?
That's right.
You are on the air.
Hi, Laura.
Thank you. Hey,
Nora.
Hi.
So, over the years, every once in a while, I will come across a wheat penny
yep.
in my, you know, in my change, and they just always strike me so adorable, and I hold on to them and try not to spend it. I'll be giving back change and go, "Ooh, you can't have that wheat penny." And then, poof, then they're gone. I accidentally have given it out. And is there really anything more precious about a wheat penny except that it just really strikes my heart?
Well, I think, it strikes your heart. B, it's a separate collectible design, and it is the first design of the pennies. So they're always going to be in more demand. So in 1959, the 50th anniversary of the penny, they basically redesigned it, and it was also, they put the Lincoln Memorial on the back. But it's the first issues that are really considered the classics of the series. And you do get real copper in them. And I know that sounds silly, but the pennies in your pocket today are some bizarro.
They don't look right, do they? The color's wrong.
Yeah. And they feel funny in your hand.
They feel like tokens from an amusement park.
Exactly. Which is, and I think the tokens from the amusement park are probably worth more.
Ouch.
But no, these are always wonderful things. And they're still, you know, they can be worth a dollar a piece. I mean, even if they're not in perfect condition. So it's the sort of thing that's wonderful, and some of them are actually very rare. I mean, all the classics of the penny series are in the wheat series, really. So if you have 1909 SVDB was the one that I grew up as a kid always looking for, and I might add, never found, you know, that's worth thousands of dollars today. So, you know, the trick is to go through them.
The next time I come across one in my change, and part of the problem is I look at it and I go, "Ooh, I still don't know what to do with it."
Well, what would I do with it? You can put it in a jar, and you can look the date up on the internet, and it'll tell you whether you've got one of the 50-cent ones, or one of the $50 ones, or one of the $500 ones.
The good news is, of course, your penny jar will actually be worth something, as opposed to my penny jar, which is worth its total times 0.001.
The easiest way to look at it is that the early pennies are worth no less, just scrap value, 2 cents
a
piece.
Well, hey, that's a good way to look at it, Laura. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So another big death in the collecting world was Bunker Hunt. And you have to be very careful when you say that on the radio. He was twice the richest man in the world, and he had lots of silver, right?
He tried to corner the silver market at the end of the 1970s.
And wasn't there something to do with the Hunts and theft and murder of silver, or am I getting my stories incorrect?
You're probably a little bit with DuPont and the murder.
Okay.
That was
Bob Stamp last time.
Okay.
But the Hunts tried to corner the silver market. They drove the price up to $50 an ounce, and when you consider today it's $15 an ounce, it's a big drop. And Bunker essentially went bankrupt yet again. He was, at that time, the wealthiest man in the world.
He's from Texas?
From Texas, absolutely.
Texas oil man, right?
Texas oil money. One of his brothers, Lamar, owned the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, the Lamar Hunt trophy. All the Hunt trophies. It's all the same family,
exactly.
Isn't it?
They are. So he was one of the truly great collectors and tried. And I was fortunate enough when he went bankrupt, Sotheby's was awarded his phenomenal collection of ancient coins to sell.
So now, when you say ancient, how ancient? Roman times?
And Greek. We're going back
to
500 BC, 600 BC.
Now, what would they make the Greek coins out of?
The first Greek coins were made out of a metal called electrum, which was a naturally occurring alloy of gold and silver that was found in riverbeds in what's today Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the first coins that were made in the 7th century BC. And Bunker had some of those, but he had the most fabulous collection. He had the rarest of the rare. We sold it for close to $25 million 20 years ago.
Wow, it's a shame the Sheik wasn't in on that one.
Oh, the Sheikhs bought some of his coins subsequently for 10 times the price we got 20 years ago.
All right, let's go back to the line at 1-800-348-2551. Naomi in Amherst.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, Naomi.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have 8 first day covers from 1945. Like, there's an Alfred E. Smith one.
Yeah.
And there's the United States Army, Iwo Jima, Franklin D. Roosevelt, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Are they worth anything?
To be honest, they're lovely, lovely souvenirs. The interest in the Second World War is giving them a little bit of a boost. But unfortunately, uh-huh. they created so, so many of them really throughout the late 1930s, 1940s, 50s uh-huh. and 60s. If you were to go and buy one from a stamp dealer, they would probably cost you between $10 and $20 a throw. If uh-huh. you were to sell them, maybe a buck a piece.
Aww.
It's quite a markup.
Sorry, it's but the thing is, you might keep it in stock for 25 years.
Yeah.
The thing is, there are an awful lot of them, and they were created, and there are less collectors now than there were then, so there are more uh-huh. collectors. There are more covers than there are collectors.
Okay.
Supply and
demand.
And
there were to begin with anyway.
Well, exactly.
Well, sorry, Naomi.
Well, thanks for taking the call, and that's very... Valuable information.
Or invaluable.
Or invaluable, no.
Yeah, right.
Terribly sorry.
Thank you.
Bye now. Let's go to Matthew in East Greenbush. Matthew.
Hi. I, similar to the fellow who was remodeling and found a token, because I know it was traditional to put something of good luck when you were building a house. When my folks, back about 35 years ago, were remodeling, I was tearing out a closet, and on one of the little ledges in between the studs, I found a cast copper, I would hesitate to call it a medallion. So it's not really a coin, but right. I thought perhaps it could have been made by someone who, well, I don't know what I supposed. It was oval, okay. About 2 inches, maybe 2 1/4 inches tall.
Yeah.
I've been trying to find in the house where I could put my hands on it. But it had three initials and Phila for Philadelphia.
Right.
And it was a full-bodied gentleman standing with a Quaker attire. You could even see
probably,
the buckles on
it sounds
his
like William Penn or something like that.
Okay, and mm. he had a pipe went from about his chest down to the ground.
Okay.
And it was just very well cast and sculpted.
Right.
And I can't remember what the initials were, but something like J.K.D. Phila or Phila. So how would I go about finding...
All right. We're going to give you at the end of the show our contact.
Why don't you give it now?
Okay. It's very simple, and you can send us a JPEG of it, and I'll see if I can figure it out.
Okay.
It's basically very simple. It's coin and stamp guys, all spelled out, at Berk, BERK.com. So it's coin and stamp guys at Berk.com. And if you send me an image, I'll see if I can't suss it out for you. It sounds, in the 19th century, they made some very interesting, what we call tokens, which were trades tokens and things like that to advertise effectively.
Uh-huh.
And this could be something along that line. And there's a very, there are a lot of very serious collectors of stuff like
okay.
that. It's not huge value, but it's interest value.
Yeah, it has a little, circlet at the top as right. though it would have been hung on a chain.
Right.
You know, like a pendant.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it's made of a flattened penny.
Yeah, it's not.
This sounds like it's a well-modeled design on it. Yeah. So this sounds like it might have actually been made as a commemorative or, as I say, a tradesman's token or something along that line.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Matthew. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined today by Bob Scott and David Tripp. Robin in Albany is next. Robin.
Hi. I have some questions about commemorative stamps. When my father passed away, my brother, my sister, and I inherited probably about 40 to 45 album-sized books of commemorative stamps dating back to the 40s
mm-hmm.
up through the 90s.
Right.
In addition, we have probably the same amount of smaller notebooks of plate blocks that date back to the 40s up
right.
through the 90s. That does not include the 4 or 5 little cardboard catalog boxes of individual stamps with their little Scott numbers on them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have so many stamps. When I ship them, I won't tell you what it cost me to ship them from South Dakota.
You probably aren't going to want to remember that number.
I don't know what to do with them. We don't know do we need to have them assessed? Are they worth anything? What do we do? Some of the stamps I know, obviously, are not worth much. I've looked through the Scott books. I get them new every year to check.
Right.
And, the plate blocks seem to be worth the most. I don't know about the commemorative stamps because, they come with their little story and they're, and then you put the stamps in there. So I don't know what to do with them.
Okay, first of all, stop buying the Scott books. If you've got a collection that dates after, well, no, they're expensive. And they don't change that much every, I buy them every 3 years or so because it's only a guide. Secondly, for stamps, that I presume this is mostly United States stamps?
Yes, they're all U.S. stamps.
Okay, and it's probably a mixture of used and unused stamps?
No, that's the thing. I should have clarified that.
They're all unused.
They're all unused, brand new stamps.
Okay, that's better. It's better. Some of the things from the 1940s are going to be worth a little bit of a premium. As a rough guide, and please bear with me, this is right, take a rough idea of what the face value is. It's not a hard calculation because most of the stamps, 1940, 1960, are going to run from 3 cents to 5 cents.
Right.
Your collection's going to be worth a little bit over half its face value.
That's what I thought, because I've been cataloging them.
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking at, I've been cataloging them by their face value, what they're, looking at what Scott's is saying, okay, fine, they're worth this much. And I mean, what we would like to do is at least get the face value for them.
And if you take about half that number, you're looking at a realistic number.
But there are no specific stamps that maybe 99% of them are relatively worthless, but there might be that one plate block that is worth something? I mean, how can you automatically say that without seeing it?
If it can have a fault or an error, then it's going to have a premium. If it's the regular stamp, the news is, since the 1920s, when they pushed out a stamp, if it was popular, they made 20, 30, 40 million of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about stamps and why they're such great collectors is, a bit like coins, they all look the same so everybody can have a collection.
Right,
The thing is, how many 3 cent stamps do you need to be able to send a first class letter, and is there still space to write the address?
Right.
And gotten letters from Bob that have, there's barely any room for my address on it because he's covered them with 3 cent stamps.
Yeah. I'm familiar with that. I mean, some of the later ones, it's like, I'm looking at them and I'm saying, no. And we split up some of the later ones because we figured those are only worth what the postage is.
All right.
And I said, there's really no point. I said, come on, guys, let's not be foolish about this. But the older stamps, we certainly thought there might be some value in there. The individual stamps that we have, there are some used ones in that particular collection.
Mm.
I haven't even begun to tap that. But, I mean, in those single stamps, they're going back to the 1800s.
Okay, well, that might be something that you can get in touch with us later. But really, 1940 on, it really is just about postage. You can get full value for it, but the way you do that is use them on a letter.
Oh, boy.
Christmas is coming and cards have to go out.
But essentially, don't use too much time. If you were dealing 1900 to 1940, I'd say, spend some time. There is value there. 1940 onwards, it's...
So the individual stamps in the boxes may be more of a possibility.
Yeah.
I thought probably that was the way it was going to go.
And you seem to be enjoying going through them. It doesn't seem...
Oh, no. I started this project 6 years ago when my father passed away.
Wow.
And I had spent an entire summer, and I went through them. And I had cataloged all of the ones that were in the album-sized binders, and then I did all of the plate blocks. I have not done the individual stamps.
Mm.
And I burn myself out. And every time I look at it, I mean, I have a table, and I have, I have the magnifying glass and the tweeze, whatever I needed because I didn't want to touch them.
Welcome to our world. This is what we do for a living.
Exactly. The only difference is they like it,
and we do it for
fun. I found them fascinating, and they were interesting to read all the stories, in the albums with the commemoratives. But right. I'm saying, okay, this is all fine and good, but what do you do with them besides collect them?
Yeah.
True. I'll give you one last piece of advice because I think it's quite practical. If you're looking through the catalog and the catalog price is less than $10, count it as zero.
Okay.
Sound like a plan?
What a depressing individual. All right, Robin, thanks. Thanks a lot for the call. We're sorry that we brought you down, but
No, I needed to have a reality check with them because I've had them insured and I'm going to call up my insurance agent and say drop the insurance.
So you've saved some money.
Or have a flood.
I have to prove it. I have to prove it.
Wait a minute. All right, Robin, a note from our legal department. Don't do that. Robin, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. Let's go over to Rich in New Hartford. Rich.
Hi. Great show, guys. I'm really enjoying it tremendously. My question is the coin equivalent to what Robin just asked you. I have an old family coin collection that must be for 100 years, and I've just started going through it and cataloging it, and I am looking to sell it. I have a fair amount of silver in it. I've got about 8,000 wheat pennies.
Good grief.
Yeah, and I think I've gone through every one of them.
Good dates?
In fact, I'm doing it right now as we speak.
What do you mean by a good date?
A good date is one of the scarcer dates. Now, have you?
I have some. I don't have. I've got some of those, and I have those separately. I don't have any of the real high-priced ones.
Okay.
You know, I've got Morgan dollars. I've got Walking Liberty heads. I've got a whole. I've got Roosevelt dimes, Barber quarters, buffaloes with dates on them.
All right, I've got a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
First of all, anything that you've got that's silver before 1964 is worth no less than scrap value. So you, unlike Bob's situation,
right?
There is, you know, unlike Bob, he's got paper value.
Right.
We have metal value. So we're always one step up.
That was a shot.
Bob's giving me a look.
It's my fault he's a metalist.
And you're a philatelist.
Yes.
So you've got the metal as your base value. So, but what sort of condition do you have?
They vary.
Okay.
You know, some are very good and some are fair. I got 9 times face for one estimate from a coin dealer.
Okay.
For the silver without looking at any of it.
Okay.
And I imagine that was a while ago.
No. Okay. No, less than a month ago.
Because silver has been slipping. I mean, since the last time we were on the show, the price of silver per ounce has dropped by 25%.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so the question is, how is the best way to market it? Should I wait?
Silver has hit the skids right now. So
wait for an uptick in the market?
I think there's going to be an uptick.
All right, we got to take a break here, Rich. Thanks very much. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Back, the home stretch with Bob Scott and David Tripp.
Support for WAMC comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. Ashokan Center, retreats, conferences, family celebrations, and school programs, a classroom in the wild, ashokancenter.org. Hudson Wine Merchants, Hudson, New York, celebrating 10 years of wine and food in the Hudson Valley, raise your glass, hudsonwinemerchants.com. And Inspire Design and Build, a fully custom remodeling, home addition, and new construction company located in Saratoga Springs, offering design consultations and estimates. InspireDesignandBuild.com.
Hello again, everyone. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, Wednesday afternoon edition. We talk stamps and coins with David Tripp and Bob Scott. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Before we get back to the calls, here's an email that came in. I'll pass this out to you, gentlemen. It says, hello, Vox Pop. I found this book of World War II war stamps in my mom's things. It contains 45 10-cent postal war stamps. I'm hoping you can tell me what they are and what value, historic or otherwise, they may have now. And this person emailed a couple of pages of pictures. Now, how's that for service?
Oh, it's a savings bond.
They're basically World War II savings stamps. What you did was you went down and during the war, you contributed to the war effort by buying a 10-cent stamp. And we have basically they're all 10-cent stamps.
Mm-hmm.
You put them in the book when the book was completely full. It was worth $4. It paid X amount of interest for X amount of years when you redeemed them.
So that's like buying war bonds.
That's essentially it. You just bought them bit by bit.
10-cent chunks. So
you could still cash these in.
Do they still collect interest?
No. The interest, they vary from issue to issue, but I think they're almost all paid out interest-wise now. Okay. I think they were only 10, 15 years or so.
Okay.
But the principal
can still be... So there's still basically legal tender.
There's about $3 here.
So is there a collectible value to those?
Oh, yes. People do like them. These were you can imagine during the war, the single 10-cent war stamps were sold by the million.
Yeah.
The slightly higher values, they do go up to $5 and beyond. I sold one for $5,000 so long ago. I tried to sell it for $1,000 for about 4 years, and then I just threw it into a sale at $500, and somebody paid $5,000 for it.
Go figure.
Don't believe a word he says.
Wait for the shake is always the...
it's going to be a long wait now.
So those in particular, Bob?
These in particular?
Yeah.
Well, they have $4.50.
So there's nothing really outrageously rare there.
No, but I would think anybody that collected something like this, the base value is $4.50. Somebody would pay $40 or $50 for this.
Very good.
Let's go to back to the phones. Ruth in Chicopee. Ruth, you're on.
Yo, hi, everyone.
Hi,
Hello.
Ruth.
I've got probably a silly question, but I was wondering if there was any value to an 1889 Indian head penny.
And what sort of condition? Is it very, very, very worn or not so very, very, very worn?
I would say it's not worn. It's encased in a bracelet, like almost, you know, glassed in a glass over it.
It's so there's no abrasion and...
I don't think so. Okay. You know,
We'll go on the assumption it's in pretty good shape then. Uh-huh. To give you an idea of the dollar value, in really beat-up condition, it's worth about $1, $1.50. In uncirculated condition, it's more like $30.
Mm, there you go.
So there's a big leap in between. So one has.
Yeah, I believe it's uncirculated. You know, it looks pristine, but once something
is mounted into a piece of jewelry, there's a chance the edge has been damaged, and collectors do take that into
interest. Perhaps not, though.
But if not, we always have to look at something before we make our final mind.
Yeah, I don't know. I was lucky if it was worth a penny.
It's worth more than a penny.
Okay, that you can take
to the bank.
Oh, well, that's good.
Okay.
All right, thank you
Thanks, Ruth.
Thanks, Ruth. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Larry in Columbia County. Hiya, Larry, you're up.
Hi, the wonderful Hello. Program.
Thank
you're
you.
Taking me back to my youth. The gentleman, and at least I was looking for an SVDB from the late 1930s.
That's a long look.
Now, what
Never
is that?
Found one.
Well, you wouldn't find one. That was the 1909 SVDB is the king.
SVDB
point.
Is
yeah, SVDB.
It was made in 1909. That's
it's
the first year.
San Francisco year. Victor D. Brenna penny.
Who designed
penny.
It?
Oh, okay.
And his initials are very prominently displayed on the reverse of the coin.
Yeah,
they
the
took
VDBs
them off of
I have.
Right.
SVDB I never found.
I know.
But I did get a 14D in circulation.
That's an impressive coin.
Yeah. What do they run now? It's in reasonable, but not great condition.
Okay. We'll say very fine.
I don't know. Maybe one grade below.
All right. Fine condition. $150, $200.
Oh, really?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. No, that's one of the... We were talking about, Ray, good dates.
Yeah.
That's a good date.
Uh-huh.
That's
there
one
were
the,
a million of them minted. Only a million.
But there are very few that survived.
Well, one survived. I got it in the closet.
Good for
Fantastic.
You, Larry.
Well done.
I also never found a 31S.
Nor did I. So the S is for San Francisco. The SD.
Gotcha.
Where they're
right.
Made.
D is Denver.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're talking shop here.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful program. You know, back in those days, all the kids saved both stamps and coins.
They did, and it was a wonderful way to learn both about the economy and the world.
Well, of course, Roosevelt was a big stamp collector.
He was. How many stamps did he have at one point? Like 2 million or a million stamps?
I think he had all of that. I mean, he was a huge collector in
his
own right.
What happened to his collection?
But he, once you're president and you're a stamp collector, guess what everybody gives you?
Stamps.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
He only had 400 coins, though.
Ah. But what happened to his collection?
It was all sold.
It was sold by a New York firm, Harmer's, in 1946. And it's, I think, the only auction catalog that actually has a preface in it written by a sitting president
wow.
of the United States.
Yeah. Thanks, Larry, for the call. Boy, Eleanor didn't wait long, did she?
No.
Cha-ching.
She wrote part of the intro, too, along with...
Mark in Port Jervis. Mark, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Mark.
Gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello, Mark.
Thank you. I'm calling today about dollar coins.
Yes.
I wanted to ask a question. My brothers and sisters, as kids, even my cousins, one of the things we always did for fun was we were taught to just hold on to dollar coins that we would come across from every once in a while. And we've got a number of them scattered around throughout the family. And I just wondered, how can you tell whether or not a dollar coin is worth more than face value?
Well, first of all, what period are we dealing with?
Are these
Eisenhower, so from the 1970s?
Some of them are, yes. I know that for sure.
Okay. Well, those are going to be worth somewhat less. I mean, Eisenhower dollars are in uncirculated condition are sort of, you know, $2 to $20, something along that line. But if you're going back to the 1930s and prior into the late 19th century, the real silver dollars, as we think of them,
yeah.
then the values are going to be very variable. They'll always have the scrap value. Which today is, you know, $12-$15, but their market value is going to be a Basel value. Base value is going to be about $20, and if they were made at one of the better mints, the value will go up incrementally. And if their condition is in pretty neat condition, then the values can go up really quite dramatically. Silver dollars are the single most highly collected denomination there is, because they're big, chunky silver things. And as somebody said to me, the price of starting to collect them is not that excessive.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
if,
makes
you know,
sense.
For $40, you can get a coin from the 1890s that looks like it was made yesterday.
Ah, okay. I mean,
okay.
Thank you very much. I wondered, we've been collecting them.
Mm-hmm.
However, none of us are...
collectors
who are in the know about where to take them. Where would we go to find out for sure the value of them?
Well, the first thing you can do is go to the library, and there's something called the Red Book, which is put out every year like the Scott catalog we were talking about, and it has basically the current prices depending on the date of the coin and where it was made and what the condition is, and that'll give you a very good guide. And then you can take it to somebody knowing that so that you don't get skinned. Because there are a lot of, shall we say, less than honest people out there.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Now, guide, the Red Book,
mm-hmm.
is that an average or is that a suggested?
It's more a retail price, and so you have to back off from there. There's also something called the Blue Book, made by the same publishing firm, which is actually what dealers will pay.
Well, so I think that would be a good
one.
That's
a good one, and you can go online. There's a lot of information just looking at eBay.
Yeah, oh, that's a great idea.
Out.
See what the market will
exactly.
bear.
Exactly.
All right, let's go to Gordon in Poughkeepsie. Gordon, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. When I was a young child, we used to go to Montreal all the time because my father was from there. And I had an uncle that was a bank president. And he gave us centennial Canadian dollar bills with no serial numbers on them. And I was wondering...
So these would be specimens.
Sorry?
These would be specimen notes, right, Bob? Bob's more of a scripophilist than I.
I always consider a specimen having specimen
written across
it. Or at least a big, bold S.
So what about something with no serial numbers, then?
You said no serial numbers on it.
I'd always call that a proof.
Okay.
Because it's a...
Or it could be an error as well.
Yes, or it could be that numerous amounts of notes that are produced that some have numbers and some don't.
Really? And they get into circulation?
Well, because
it depends who produces them.
It's a process where they put them through a couple of printers, and sometimes things come out improperly printed because the two sheets can get stuck together.
Okay.
And they go through. Anyway, what we would this is something that I think, Gordon, if you can send us an image, we might be able to help you a little bit with.
Okay. And that's at coins at
coin and stamp guys
GUYS AND
spelled out.
Okay, yep.
Coin and stamp guys at Burke BERK.com.
Okay.
All right.
We just moved I found them in a book. They're still in the original envelope from 1967 that he gave us, so they're in perfect condition.
They could be. They could be. Nice. There could be some collector value
there.
Interesting. Definitely. Absolutely.
So is it possible that these were seconds or ones that were pulled from circulation and just never meant to be out there?
Well, that since we have a bank president involved in this, my sense is that he probably was given something. These can sometimes be for presentation purposes.
Quite likely.
So does that lower their value as a collectible?
It depends on how many they made.
Generally doesn't do it any harm.
No. Oh, and no. It's also possibilities that, you know, certain banks would put these in frames so that so the customers can see what the new banknotes look like.
Yes.
For example, when we had...
Which really are specimens, and that's what the specimen means, which
And, for example, in the 1860s, when we ran out of change, we actually made paper fractional currency. So for pennies, 3 cents, 5 cents. And you would get these big, so the government actually made up these fabulous shields with all the different designs on them that they sent
American
to the banks.
Banknote company.
And they hung them on the walls so the customers can go in and see what they looked like so they wouldn't think that they were being having funny money passed.
I have never heard of this. Are these collectible?
Oh,
paper.
Oh, yes. And the shields particularly. I mean, the whole big money shields, minimum of a couple of $1,000.
Wow, I'll be darned.
Were also salesmen's books. I mean, they were used for selling. They were used for everything. And they printed beautiful things. Make something of them.
Yeah.
Let's go to David in Chicopee. David, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I really appreciate the stuff you're doing on the show. I have a $50 gold coin that I purchased back in 2006. It's a Buffalo replica, and it was the
nickel design. The
yeah, exactly. But they made it into a $50 gold piece.
Right. Absolutely.
I bought it from the U.S. Mint. It's proof uncirculated. I recently saw an article that said or claimed that that particular coin had really increased in value because it was a 24-karat gold piece. It was 0.999, and there was some sort of shortage when they were making these things. And I wanted to find out if that's correct and if you guys had any idea as to what the value of that coin would be.
They are indeed considered collectibles. Mm. There's absolutely no doubt about it. They are 999 fine, so they're as pure as, we won't say driven snow, but we will say that they are pure gold. And their value, because of the design, they're sought after. And the date on it, I'm just trying to figure the date. I don't know what you paid, but they're worth generally between $1,200 and $1,500. So
okay, very good. Hey, well, I did pay a lot less than that because gold was not selling for quite as high as it is currently.
Right.
But the reason why I had purchased it was because of the fact that it was such a beautiful coin.
It is. We all remember the old Buffalo nickel, and
sure.
This is basically the Buffalo nickel in gold. And because of the subject matter of an American Indian and the buffalo, America's animal, basically, on the back by Frazier, who was one of the great sculptors, it is considered really one of the high points of all American coinage from just the visual look. And there's always a market for those.
David, thanks a lot. Now, the actual buffalo nickels, which we see less and less of when we were kids, we saw them
all
the time.
All the time, exactly.
And anything worth... anything
oh, absolutely.
In that?
Yeah. I mean, they can be worth $5 on up. I mean, assuming it's got a date on it.
Okay. Let's go. Let's do an email here. We're just about out of time. Hi, Ray and the rest of the gentlemen. Well, there you go. I have a $20 bill from the 1970s. It must have been slightly folded vertically while printed. It has a white stripe, 1/8 inch, from top to bottom near the center, and it is in good condition. Is this just a curiosity item? Brian from Duanesburg wants to know.
It's more of a curiosity.
Yes.
It's what we call a fold. Basically, when it went through the printing press, the paper was folded over, and so it didn't print the entire piece of paper. And then when you stretch it out, there's that white streak where the ink didn't come in contact. It is an error. There's no doubt about it. But it's really what we consider a minor error.
So coin errors are much... in other words, you could see how a paper would fold.
Right.
A coin error would seem like something really went wrong.
Not really. I mean, there are lots of coin errors out there, too, because they make them by such quantity that it just doesn't fall in. The errors that are worth serious money are stamp errors.
The upside-down planes and whatnot?
Yeah.
We tend to use a couple more colors and a couple of more processes to actually create the stamps. So the chance
is that a shot, Bob?
Yeah, you know, I got to say...
for the chance of an error, much higher.
Yeah, the elitism is creeping through here.
Well, we have to try. We are only paper after all.
Well, you know, that's a great time to... And boy, you guys were really sniping today. I appreciate it a great deal. Thanks a lot for being here, Bob Scott and David Tripp. The email address once again?
coinandstampguys@berk.com.
And of course, we have information right at our website, wamc.org. Thanks for listening. Support comes from Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953. Sheehy, Sheehy, opticians.com. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. Honestwade.coop. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls. Remember, the conversation continues online, wamc.org/voxpop. Thanks to our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for a news update.